5%. Condo prices in both counties tumbled by double digits. Alongside decreasing home prices, the time it takes to sell a home is also increasing. Beginning today, July 1st, Sarasota County Breeze on-demand service will increase from $2 to $3 for the first 3 miles of travel. The service, which first started in 2021, serves 32,000 monthly riders. Meanwhile, rides on Route 99, the most traveled fixed route in the area, will be free. The fare changes were passed unanimously in June by the Sarasota County Commission. On the eve of the new fiscal year in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis signs into law an approximately $115 billion budget after using his line-item veto power to axe $600 million in spending. The budget was passed by the state legislature on the 16th of June, where it awaited approval by DeSantis. The budget is around $3 billion less than that of the last fiscal year. Governor Ron DeSantis said on Monday that he has not received any clear directive regarding the future of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, from the White House. Amid ongoing changes in governmental programs by the current administration, DeSantis said he is unsure as to how FEMA might respond if a major storm makes impact on Florida. DeSantis has previously said that it is best for the country to no longer have FEMA involved in disaster management. Then relief aid will come from Florida surplus funds. He expressed his hope to speak with the president today about FEMA during the president's visit to the Alligator Alcatraz immigration internment camp. Elon Musk's SpaceX has proposed to build a satellite communications facility in Manatee County. The facility would operate under SpaceX's Starlink subsidiary, which is dedicated to supplying internet connections to users around the globe. The proposed project would take up 3/4 acre in Mayaca City and consist of 40 fenced-in satellite antennas. This has been Mason Chambliss with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, July 1st.
Good morning. Welcome to the Healthy Living Hour. My name is Bob Connors. Rebecca Costner is out today. I'm sitting in for her. And the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guest and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, the board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. So I'm very happy to be sitting in with Rebecca. I have a few guests in the studio, and we have Andrew Hudson, the program director, the director of the Community Harvest, SRQ. Welcome, Andrew. Do I have that right?
Yes, I'm the program director. It's great to be.
Let's see if you're coming through. For some reason, I didn't hear you say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the program director for Community Harvest SRQ, and it's an honor to be here.
Yeah, it's very low for some reason, but we will get it up there. We will get it up there. And we have Roger Diaz with us today. Roger is a concerned citizen around the issues that we're going to be discussing today, into organic food. He's a vegan. He loves everything about Community Harvest, SIQ. So we're going to have a good conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. And yeah, I look forward to learning more about the Community Harvest SRQ.
So, Russell, I mean, Russell. Why do I think you're Russell? I have a friend named Russell. He's as tall as you. Now, what are you? Are you 6'4", Andrew?
Thereabouts.
Yeah. And, I'm going to figure out why you're not coming through that. I don't know why, but we're going to keep experimenting here. If not, you might have to go to the black microphone and alternate. So anyway, Andrew, tell us a little bit about Community Harvest SIQ and how you became the director.
Okay, first of all, Can you hear me okay? Are you hearing me?
Well, it seems like you're coming through a little, but not as much as you should be. So why don't you just take the black one for now, and you guys can, you know, use the same microphone. Let's see how you're coming.
Okay.
Go ahead. It's much better.
Okay.
Much better.
Great. Well, Community Harvest SRQ started out as Transition Sarasota in 2010, and that word transition was part of the transition movement internationally. The idea is the world is going through a transition, and there are about 1,000 different communities around the world who are trying to do that transition well. And we call it the poly crisis. There are a bunch of different crises, ecological, economic, and so on, but they all point to we need to do local things more resiliently and in a celebratory way. There are positive things we can do as a community. And you can do that around energy. You can do that around economics. Locally, we found that food was a really good focus. And so it was natural about 3 years ago to rebrand our organization as Community Harvest SRQ. And we focus on food systems, promoting everything from the soil to the plate and everything in between. So we're known for several different programs, but the main thing we do is do some gleaning, and we do an Eat Local Week that promotes all sorts of local food things.
So I know this was Transition Sarasota.
That's right, and a lot of people still know it as that, but we've rebranded as Community Harvest because a lot of people heard the word transition and they just couldn't tell what we were about. So Community Harvest says, okay, we're working on food systems and we're working on it in a way that everybody can feel good about.
I know you used to have a full week as in October. We were talking about events that happened with restaurants involved and different people and different. Is that, and you just said right before I mentioned it was transition, is that's still happening then?
Yeah, Eat Local Week this year will be November 1st through 9th, and we will have everything from farm tours to educational events to local food events at restaurants. So, yeah, people should get that on their calendars, November 1st through 9th.
So tell us a little more, Andrew, about Community Harvest, and do you look for volunteers, and what percentage of the people who are into organic farming and a healthy lifestyle are fully aware of Community Harvest at this point in time, and can people get involved and help you out?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to get involved. We have four different gleaning programs, and especially two of them, we're always looking for volunteers. During the growing season, which some people don't know that the growing season, Roger and I both know this very well, the growing season is over the winter here. But as Northerners, I'm a Northerner, you're a Northerner.
I'm a Northerner.
And Bob Connors is definitely a Northerner. It was a huge change for all of us to come here and get your energy up over the winter because you're used to your energy getting up in the spring. So I just want people out there to know that the growing season is over the winter. So we're in the off season right now, and during the growing season, we will be doing gleaning on farms in the local area. Our service area is Manatee and Sarasota counties. And so we'll be going out on farms doing gleaning. Over the 15 years that we've done this, we've gleaned 500,000 pounds of food to go to share with people who need it. So we do some substantial gleaning at farms. Over the summer, we do, well, all year, but the one thing that's going on right now is our Suncoast Fruit Rescue Program. So in people's yards, people have fruit trees, and they'll have extra that they can't use, and so they call us, and we'll get volunteers to go out and pick that fruit and then share that around. So right now, we are especially looking for fruit trees. We had a drought over the spring. It doesn't feel like it now, but this season is heavily affected by drought because early in the spring, when they were setting fruit, trees didn't get enough water. So if anybody out there has trees with a little extra fruit on it, we would especially love that this year. People can go to Community Harvest SRQ
.org, and there's a drop-down under initiatives, and they could sign up their tree.
So why is it so important for to think about the local food system? I know you said a little bit about that, but I know you can elaborate.
I sure can elaborate. I'll give you three reasons why local food's important. First of all, it's more nutritious. Food that travels hundreds of miles, the average piece of food travels 1,600 miles, South America or the West Coast or wherever. To travel like that, it has to be picked before it's ripe. And so it's picked, it travels, and it deteriorates while it's traveling. And so it loses nutrition in that trip. So first of all, local food is more nutritious objectively. That's not just I'm passionate about local food, so I'm saying that. There are studies on local food being more nutritious.
I can back that up.
Yeah, Roger.
One of the companies I did some work for was a trucking company, and what they did was they trucked tomatoes from Florida in the wintertime up to the Northeast Canada, and the trucks were equipped with not only refrigeration, but also they put a gas in the trucks so that the tomatoes ripen while they travel up north. And it's ethane or something. I'm not sure exactly what the gas is, but it ripens the tomatoes. And I was really surprised that the tomatoes that I ate during the wintertime up north had, you know, gone through that type of journey and that type of chemical process.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you could say about that, but it's not very appetizing.
No, not at all.
Another thing that I feel like I can say in public, even though I don't have studies on this, but local food is safer. In my 15 years, we were talking, it wasn't part of my introduction, but some people know that I used to work for Jessica's Organic Farm. I worked there for a long time. In my 15 years there, we had a lot of national scares for E. coli or other outbreaks in the food supply. Not once did I see an example of local food being the source of those scares. It was always mass-produced food traveling across state lines from large farms. So that's a that's anecdotal. That's my observation over 15 years, but I feel very solid about saying local food is safer. I've never seen an outbreak of E. coli or any of these other things that we're very concerned about from local food. The third thing is an economic thing. There is a multiplier effect when you spend money locally. So if I go and buy tomatoes from a local farmer compared to me going to a out-of-state company and buying out-of-state tomatoes, the local purchase will have a multiplier effect because I'm giving money to somebody locally who's going to buy something else from somebody locally. So you have a multiplier effect on average of 5.1. You add $5.1 to your local economy by a local purchase of a local product. If you buy a out-of-state product from an out-of-state company, there is a multiplier effect because there are local employees of that company. So there's a multiplier effect of 1.4 to buy an out-of-state product from an out-of-state company. So you have over three times as much economic effect on your local place if you buy local food from a local farmer. So that's if that's what motivates people, there are some people who are really motivated by economic effects. We need those people to be more vocal, by the way. So that's just something I want to empower people to focus on. So that's three reasons to do local food. I could expand, like you said, Bob, I could talk about this all day, but it's more nutritious, it's safer, and economically it makes a big difference in the community.
Andrew and Roger, I have to agree with both of you in relationship to the fact that, you know, you go into Whole Foods, you go into Sprouts, and last week about a beautiful-looking honeydew melon, and it was sitting on a counter for like a week. And said, it's got to be time to cut into this. And And we cut into it. It was nowhere close to being ripe. And I just can't believe that these major food chains would do what they do around, you know, refrigerating fruit well before it should be refrigerated because it isn't ripe. And then they ship it, as you said, across the country or up the coast. And it's sitting in the store, and it's looking beautiful. And Joanne said, take that back to Sprouts. I said, I'm not going to take it back, you know, but... You know, I was tempted to. I would say, we do take things back when they're bad. And that's happened at other stores, at Trader Joe's. If you're not careful and you don't look at the date, and then you get home and 2 days later you open the bag and all the green beans are virtually past their ripe stage. And then I look at the date and it's like the day I open it. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's so small. The print is so small that most people cannot find the date anyway. So I just feel bad that people have to figure it all out for themselves. And that.
So I want to come back to that. I have another talking point on that. It's quarter hour. Do you have to do an announcement?
Do we? Well, let me do one right now. Thank you very much. I want to mention that support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or info@manateespirit.com. And the website is manateespirit.com. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it, Andrew. We can use all the help we can get here, especially me. Thank you.
I love this station, so thank you. I'm glad I got to contribute. As far as food tasting good, that is something that when we talk about food systems, it's easy to not get down to that personal experience. But there's one thing about local food that completely bears on that, which is if the food is going to be sold in the very near future, you can pick it ripe. Okay. If it's got to travel across the country, and this is what you were kind of saying, Roger, if it's got to travel across the country, you have to pick it before it's ripe. And then you do all sorts of malfeasance to to get it to ripen or appear to be ripe. But if you can pick a tomato that's ripe and sell it today or tomorrow, everybody knows the difference between a vine-ripened tomato and one that's not ripe. And my experience as a parent was I was really shocked that my kid naturally liked vegetables. And I've seen this with a lot of other parents. They expect that kids don't like vegetables because kids don't like cardboardy vegetables that were picked before they were ripe. You know, it's natural to not like pre-ripe vegetables. But if you buy local food, it objectively tastes better. There's something Brix, B-R-I-X, which is an objective measurement of the sugars in vegetables and fruits. The Brix content on local vegetables is much, much higher. I don't have the statistics, but it's objectively a lot higher. So there are more sugars. Kids like them more. So local food really does objectively taste better.
Well, I can give you a subjective opinion on that.
Great.
I worked with Warden Farms, an organic farm out of Punta Gorda, for about 10 years. And the produce is so much different than what you purchase in the store. I mean, it's, as you said, it's picked ripe. It's not picked, you know, green and then ripening in trucks. You know, not only the flavors, but, of course, I think, and again, this is just subjective opinion, the vitamins and the nutrients in it, that it's, to me, it's much more nutrient dense and provides the substance that, I'm a vegetarian, not a vegan, Bob, but.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I can't give up eggs yet. I'm still hooked on those, but, yeah, it's, you know, the, you could feel it in your body when you eat the food. You're either getting substance or you're like I feel like I'm eating cardboard a lot of times when I'm eating produce that comes out of the market, supermarkets.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. If there was one thing people took away from this interview, I would want it to be that local food really does taste better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I appreciate that. Oh, you want me to keep going?
Keep going. You have a lot to say, and we don't want to miss anything.
Well, I've used the term food system, so I'll just expand a little bit that, because there are a lot of people who don't know that term. They're not used to thinking in terms of a food system. Traditionally, we had what we now call food sheds. So you would have – it was like a watershed. Okay, a watershed is an area that drains into any given water body, like a river. And so you've got this big geographic territory that feeds into a river, and that's the watershed. And so borrowing from that idea, over the last few decades, we've come up with this idea of food shed. Food sheds are something that used to just happen naturally, where you'd have a city and there would be an area around it of farms that feed into that city. And then there's some point at which, if you go far enough away, those farms start feeding into another municipality. And so that line creates a sort of naturally occurring line around a city or a municipality. And that area is the food shed. Okay, does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a naturally occurring food shed traditionally, and we didn't even think about it until we started losing them, okay, until we started using fossil fuels to truck things farther and farther in the train systems, and then we started to notice that we lost all sorts of things by not having a food shed, and we've been talking about them, all the great things about local food. We didn't start noticing in them until we had about a generation in the mid-20th century, a whole generation of losing that. And then people said, wait, we used to be more nutritious and we have more health concerns. You know, this gets to some of Rebecca's concerns that are the show about. There are all sorts of health concerns that come with inferior food and inferior food dynamics. And degradation of soil, of course, is part of this. We could go in a lot of different directions, but rather than talk about all the problems, what we try to work on, and there are a lot of other organizations, we're not the only one, but what we try to work on is, okay, what do we want to create? What's the positive thing we want? Well, we want something that's like a food shed. But these days, things are going in so many different directions that it's helpful to talk about a food system. And so within a system that's bringing us our food, we want to bias ourselves more and more toward having local food. Again, the number one reason to do that is it's better, it tastes better, it's more nutritious, okay? Yeah. There's all sorts of economic reasons to do that too. So, yeah, so there's a system by which our food comes to us, and we are trying to bias in the direction more and more of locally produced food. So does that make sense? The food system is the modern system, but we hold the food shed as the sort of ideal that we're trying to work with.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I watched a few months ago one of the PBS specials on talking about the early 1900s when things started changing in America. And one of the things they talked about was frozen foods. It was Birdseye who came up with a method of freezing food, vegetables, and, of course, then it could be transported, you know, across the country in trains and things like that. But, you know, part of that show, which I remember, is when you're talking about the food shed, was the fact that the farmers before, you know, this modernization of food processing, the farmers lived around the city and they brought their food into the cities and sold it in carts, you know, going down the streets, watermelons, you know, broccoli, whatever. You know, so the city was being fed by the local food shed until, you know, the modernization of food processing and I mean, the history is really fascinating. And But it, to me, it feels like for myself, I need to stay, and I actively work to try to find local organic food to eat and to buy and to eat and to support our local farmers.
Yeah, and a good I'm realizing that your story is a really good illustration of this. Your story, what I really mean is I think of you with Warden, where Warden is outside the service area of Community Harvest SRQ. Okay, we work with Sarasota, Manatee counties. Warden is in the next county south. I forget which county it's called.
Punta Gorda, Charlotte County.
Charlotte County, yeah. And but they are obviously an important part of the food system here. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're not they're not maybe if we drew what our food shed was, they're not in our food shed, but they are clearly part of our food system. And like you said, they produce excellent food. They're very responsive to the community. They're here at the Sarasota Farmers Market. They're up north of Community Harvest's service area in St. Pete.
Right. Yep.
So that's a good example of how we have to think more systematically now, but we still want to hold that ideal, which you beautifully illustrated, of that history of a food shed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – and my part with Warden Farms was when they had the CSA, Consumer Source Agriculture Program, where they were the produce that they would – produce would go into like half bushel boxes that people had a subscription to. In fact, here at WSLR during the COVID, we were distributing the boxes here. But, you know, and I was kind of disappointed that went away, but I do understand the economics of it. It was a very expensive way to get food to the consumer. So the farmers market was a much more economical way for them. But, you know, I would love to see the consumer source agriculture come back where people get a box of vegetables each week. And, you know, what was really interesting about that was, as I would, deliver the boxes to different locations, the people that were picking them up would go, "What's in the box this week?" 'Cause it would be, you know, squash or, something that they normally don't eat, and so it expanded their diet, which to me I think is really important with vegetables, is to just not eat the same thing over and over again, but to expand, you know, what you eat.
Yeah, I'd like to expand on community supported agriculture, consumer supported agriculture, CSA.
Okay.
And then, Bob, in a minute and a half, it'll be the half hour.
Oh, well, actually, I have something I'd like to play, Andrew, only because it might give – we're fortunate to have you to the end of the hour, and I know you have a lot to say, but this – I have a five-and-a-half-minute video here on organic farming. What is organic farming? Sustainable agriculture. So I thought that might give you even more to talk about, but – Let me play that. You're listening to your own community radio station right here, WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WBPV LP 100.1 FM Bradenton, and this is the Healthy Living Hour. Rebecca Acosta is out today. I'm Bob Connors, sitting with Andrew Hudson and Roger Diaz, talking about the harvest.
Community Harvest SRQ.
Community Harvest SRQ. And I'm playing a 5 to 6 minute audio and relating to organic farming, sustainable agriculture. And let me see if this is coming on. We will expect.
And who is this?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me see if it says. I don't know. Yet. We're going to have to go blind. Let's see.
Okay.
Of agriculture that involves the cultivation of crops and the rearing of animals using natural methods and without the use of synthetic inputs such as chemical fertilizers, pesticides, and genetically modified organisms, GMOs. Organic farming is based on the principles of sustainability, biodiversity, and ecological balance. The primary goal of organic farming is to produce healthy and nutritious food while preserving the health of the soil, water, and the environment. Organic farmers use a range of techniques to manage pests, diseases, and weeds, including crop rotation, biological control, and the use of natural fertilizers and compost. There are several reasons why organic farming is important. Organic farming is important for promoting sustainable agriculture, improving food quality and safety, and protecting the environment. Organic farming has several benefits that can positively impact the health of human beings. Some of the benefits are: avoidance of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers. Organic farmers use natural methods to control pests and fertilize crops. This means that there is less exposure to synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, which have been linked to numerous health problems such as cancer, reproductive issues, and neurological disorders. Higher nutrient content. Studies have shown that organic produce can have higher nutrient content than conventionally grown produce. For example, organic fruits and vegetables often have higher levels of vitamin C, iron, and magnesium. Lower exposure to antibiotics and hormones. Organic farming prohibits the use of antibiotics and hormones in livestock production, which means that people who consume organic meat and dairy products are less likely to be exposed to these substances. Reduced risk of food contamination. Organic farming practices, such as crop rotation and the use of natural fertilizers, can reduce the risk of contamination by harmful bacteria like E. coli and Salmonella. Organic farming has numerous benefits for the environment. Here are some of the ways in which organic farming can benefit the environment. Soil health. Organic farming practices, such as crop rotation, cover cropping, and the use of natural fertilizers, help to build healthy soils. Healthy soils are better able to retain water, support diverse plant life, and resist erosion. Reduced use of synthetic chemicals. Organic farmers use natural methods to control pests and fertilize crops. This means that there is less use of synthetic chemicals that can harm wildlife, soil health, and water quality. Biodiversity. Organic farms tend to have more diverse plant and animal life than conventional farms. By promoting biodiversity, organic farming can help to support ecosystems and the natural balance of species.
That was a video I found on the internet. I played about half of it. And you can always find it, Importance of Organic Farming. What is organic farming? Sustainable agriculture. But since we have Andrew here, he can talk about any and all of this this subject matter. So, Andrew, go ahead, continue. Where will we go next in this conversation?
Well, thank you for that. I just want to pick up on what Roger was saying earlier, which is a strategy for small farms, and especially organic farms like what you were just playing. It's a strategy for connecting with consumers in more meaningful ways, as well as an economically viable way. And so a CSA, community-supported agriculture, or you know, there's a lot of ways that acronym is used. CSAs are basically you pay up front for a season, and then the farmer has money at the beginning of the season. So from a farmer's standpoint, the importance of CSAs are, if you give me money up front, then when I'm planting and I don't have any produce to sell yet, I still have the money for my season, so I can pay my workers and I can pay for seeds and stuff. So that's something a lot of people don't realize, is farmers have this big time at the beginning of the season when you're planting and you're spending a lot of money and you don't have any money coming in. So CSAs, that's one of several benefits to those. But the basic idea is, you like Roger, you were saying, you get a box of food every week. So you pay up front, you get a box of food every week, and then it's a little bit of an adventure. And you might get fennel, and then you have to learn how to cook fennel. That was my big experience in the 90s when I first did a CSA in Oregon. I got fennel, and I don't know what this is, but CSAs usually have a newsletter. Mm-hmm. And so here's a couple recipes of how to use fennel, which if anybody's out there, just chop it up with a bunch of vegetables and roast it. It's delicious. If you don't know what else to do with fennel. But, of course, I'm not talking about fennel. I'm just talking about the experience of growing novel things, which historically we had such a broader, richer array of stuff that farms produced. Now we have, you know, more and more concentration of just a few things. You know, if you ask the average kid to name vegetables, I don't know if they could name a dozen.
Yeah.
And so so it's a very important educational thing to help get us back in touch with the earth. And among other reasons, CSAs help people be in touch with what's going on so that they are informed voters and informed citizens, because there are so many things that we need urban people to be aware of about land use and other ecological issues, where we need to hold our leaders accountable. But if we don't know what's going on land, we aren't informed to do that. Yeah. So I just love CSAs for so many reasons. The last one I'll add is a community. The first word in CSA is community. And CSAs naturally lead to social events on farms. And kids love social events on farms. My kid grew up at Jessica's, just free range, you know, free range child rearing is actually a phrase these days. You can look that up. All of us above a certain age know the benefits of being turned loose in the outdoors, and we've lost a lot. Now, we've gained a lot by being more concerned about child safety. I'm really glad we don't have some of the social problems we used to have with not watching our kids enough. So there are reasons we are where we are, but we need to figure out safe places for children to be outdoors and be touching soil. And CSAs are a vehicle for making a safe context where everybody knows each other. So I'm a big fan. CSAs, and I especially wanted to pick up on you talking about it, because they were very popular about 10 years ago. They've been dwindling lately. But it's a model I hope people will show interest from the consumer side, because CSAs, I don't know if you know this, but they originated in Europe, where a community would come together in a community organizing model, and a town would say, we want a CSA, and then the town would hire a farmer. The farmer wasn't the organizer of the CSA, and that's the best way for that model to work, is for a group to organize a CSA and then hire a farmer to do it, because farmers are already busy enough. Like, that's a laughable understatement.
Yeah.
Farmers are too busy to organize CSAs. We need groups to organize them. And if a group approached me as a farmer, I would love that. And I can't speak for any farms these days. I don't work at a farm anymore. A lot of people don't know that. I don't work at a farm anymore. So I can't speak for any farm that I used to work at specifically, or any other farm. But I'm pretty confident that farmers would be open to that if a group was interested.
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely. 'Cause, again, just my experience with working with Warden Farms on that is that there was so much effort in organizing and promoting and those types of things, which is not what they wanted to do. They just wanted to grow healthy vegetables. And I never even thought of it from that approach. But, you know, that's something that we certainly could do as a community, is to provide that end of it, the support, the promotion, the organization. And that's really great. And you know, you were talking also, going back a step or two here about the, you know, the local farms. And one of the things that I'm seeing, and it's not just here in Sarasota or Florida, is the fact that with the price of land going up, even though the taxes are relatively low, the farmers are being pushed out. I mean, like up in the Bradenton area, it's growing so quickly. The farms are being surrounded by housing developments. You know, it's we need to protect those farms. They're such a valuable resource. Once they're gone, then we're stuck with nothing but, you know, vegetables being trucked in from Ecuador. So, you know, there's issues there, and I certainly would be willing and able to you know, support whatever we need to do to get back to the basics.
Well, I appreciate that, and you, I think, speak for a lot of people. A lot of people are willing and that willing to put some effort into it. Like, they won't necessarily be able to make it their career. It's not going to be a vocational thing, but a lot of people are willing to put effort into it. And so let's just talk about that a little bit. What can people do? The transition movement is something that I've bought into deeply. There's a bunch of us who are really into it. And a big part of it is the idea that genius happens when you create a social space for it to happen. So there's a lot of faith in groups of people generating stuff. And so what we try to do is not have me or we're just hiring a new executive director. I know who it is. She's going to be great. So I can tell people that it's going to be a woman. She's awesome. We will be revealing that soon. So we don't, but she nor I nor anybody on our board, we're not trying to get in a room by ourselves and figure it all out and then tell everybody what to do. What we're trying to have is get groups together and trust that while we're doing good things, we're also building relationship and we're building a social network that is a space that the genius emerges within. So when you're describing that, I have a mix of feelings. One of the feelings, and I just want to name this because I think everybody feels it, I feel a little overwhelmed when you're talking about that. I wish I knew more about land use. My brain is not up to the task by itself. So we have profound challenges in this area, but we have profound capacity also. So when we get a group together to glean, we take time during the middle. We have a break in the middle. First of all, it's hot. So we definitely take breaks. But we have a time for discussion and sharing announcements. And it's not just my announcements about Community Harvest SRQ. People share announcements about other things that we can be doing to improve the food system locally. It's built into our system to be sharing solutions to the issues you were just naming. I'll just name some other things people can do. Mm-hmm. The number one thing you can do, if you don't know where to start, is start shopping at a farmer's market. We have 13 farmer's markets in the two-county area. No matter where you are in the two-county area, there's a farmer's market near you. From Englewood, North Manatee County, Lakewood Ranch, and everything in between. And we have supreme farmers markets downtown Sarasota, and a lot of people don't know downtown Bradenton market is absolutely rocking now. They take the summer off. Sarasota market is running every week right now. So Bradenton, just stopped for the season at the end of May, but they'll be picking up in September. They have over 140 vendors, guys. When I lived downtown Bradenton 15 years ago, it was like 12. So it's probably a lot of people who don't realize that Bradenton is absolutely knocking it out of the park now. So if anybody can get there, they should, even from Sarasota, you should drive up and at least one weekend check out the Bradenton Farmers Market.
But as a reminder, again, our season runs from October to May. And so pretty much anything you'll find in the marketplace right now is probably not local to speak of other than fruits. But in Sarasota, I think there is a hydroponic farm that's still at the Sarasota market with their goods. That's so important to and the gleaning idea. And I have not done the gleaning myself, but certainly something I'm going to do in the future. Again, bringing the community together to just even get out in the field and to get back to earth. You know, we with our cell phones, and we're, you know, on Facebook and electronics and everything going on, that relationship with the earth is so, for me, is so important to my health. I grew up on a, what we called a city farm. My dad had a full-time job, but we had 40 acres. We had cows. We had a half-acre garden that my mom and her family would get together, and we would can, put the green beans and the beets and, you know, everything into jars, into the, you know, and for the rest of the winter. We're so far away from that now. I miss that.
Mm. Yeah, and farmers markets are a small way, but very, very meaningful way that you can get a little bit of that in your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting. We're both vegetarians. We're both vegetable farm guys. And so I do want to give a shout out to the meat producers.
Okay.
We have excellent meat producers in the Two-County area. And so there are different ways that you can get involved in that. One that I've discovered recently, when I say you, I mean you at home, because I'm vegetarian, so I don't do this. But there's an incredible tradition of tallow, of fat from animals being rendered in a way where it's used in cooking and it's used as a preservative. So there are a couple tallow producers in Manatee County, especially Circle 6 Ranch is a very well-known ranch in Manatee County that produces a high-quality tallow that's used in restaurants. If people eat meat, tallow is something that's coming back into vogue, and it's a really good, very high-nutrient product that people should be looking out for. I'll give a couple resources people can look for. So, you know, don't just look, I mean, do join us. And Roger, I appreciate you said that you want to come glean sometime.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to forget that. You'll be hearing from me. folks, do sign up for gleaning. But also look, there are so many resources out there, and I'll just name one that's external to us and one from us. Edible Sarasota is a fantastic magazine. And I've been getting to know them. It's really interesting because when I was a farmer, I just knew that as a magazine. And it's easy to look at it and go, oh, that's the sort of wealthy Sarasota food thing. But as I've been getting to know them, they always have an article on a local farmer or some local food thing. They assign really deep subjects to some of their writers. They also connect deeply with local restaurants. And so that's a shout out I want to give. There are a lot of local restaurants that are deeply committed to local food. Mm-hmm. And if people can just discern that and look for those restaurants that purchase local food, this is a local economic engine. Local restaurants bring a lot of money to the local area, and especially when they're purchasing local food. So Edible Sarasota is a fantastic resource for being able to find who those restaurants are. The other thing I want to put out there to people is if they go to our website, we have the Eat Local Guide, and we have over 200 local food businesses that or organizations, and it's Google Maps style, so there's pins all over the two-county area. We have over 200 different organizations. It's searchable. It is tabbed. What's the word I'm looking for where you have categories? I'm still coming out of farming into, like, some of the details of doing nonprofit work. But anyway, you can search by category. Okay, if you want to look for nonprofits or you want to look for restaurants or whatever, you can filter this device.
Let me mention the website is communityharvestsrq.org. Communityharvestsrq.org. And we're finishing up the hour here with Andrew Hudson, the program director of Community Harvest SRQ. And Roger is here as well, a concerned Sarasota citizen, concerned about what's going on with the local food production and the importance of growing local and eating local.
Absolutely. So It's been so great to be on. I'm really excited to be here. I love talking to you, Bob, every time. I always, in my head, I go, Bob Connors. I just love the way you say your name. And the way.
Thank you.
Because I know we're going to need to cut it off. We got to be, you know, timely. But if I'm leaving people with a couple things, first of all, local food tastes better. Just let yourself be motivated by your gut rather than what you should be doing. Like we think about this stuff so much, but just be attracted to better food. And that is a really good guide. Local food tastes better. The other thing I want to put out there is Eat Local Week will be November 1st through 9th. We have just secured our founder, Don Hall, will be our keynote speaker. He will be speaking at the Sustainable Communities Workshop on November 6th. I will be interviewing him publicly at an event, and we'll have one other event. So we'll have a lot of Don Hall. You can't get too much of Don Hall. We just love him. He did so much for this community. So we're getting him to come back from Colorado for a week, November 1st through 9th. And we'll have a bunch of educational events. It's really worth putting on your calendar. So people should watch out for that. And if they want to hear more, I know you're going to ask me this, so I'm just going to get to it. If they want to hear more, go to the website. Bob already said it, communityharvestsrq.org. We have a newsletter we put out in odd-numbered months, so July, the seventh month, we'll be having a newsletter come out in a couple weeks. People should sign up for the newsletter, and then you can get the whole deal of what we do. The other thing is we're really ramping up social media. So especially everybody under 40, just forget about the newsletter and just go to Facebook or Instagram, and you'll be seeing a lot from us there. And that's, you know, you search for Community Harvest SRQ.
So I assume in terms of gleaning and signing up to doing gleaning, which, of course, will happen in the fall and over the winter, do we go to the website to find information about that, or how do we go about getting signed up for that?
Yeah, I mean, if people want to email me, they can, andrew@communityharvestsrq.org. So that's a fine way, my name at the domain. There are buttons on the website, so you just go to the website and press a button. And while we're talking about gleaning, the number one thing we're looking for right now is more fruit trees. So if anybody knows of a fruit tree that got through the drought okay and is producing more than they can use, please hit us up. And while we're doing it, do I have time to say one more agricultural thing?
Oh, yeah. No, I said we had 10 minutes left, Andrew. You might have thought I only said a couple
minutes. I thought we were wrapping up.
No, go ahead. We have plenty of time.
Okay. So with this drought that we had, this is a great example of how things unfold a lot slower with agriculture than they do than the way our American minds are trained. Mm-hmm. And I see two producers locally, two people with land who are having no problem with this drought. And that's Peter Burkhart and Daryl McCullough. Both of these guys are professional growers, but they have a lot of fruit trees on their home property. And they are having plenty of mangoes, whereas a lot of people have a much reduced crop. Well, they have mulched their trees all the way out to their drip line. Okay, mm-hmm. So a really important thing, if you're a tree owner and you want to have robust production from your tree, you need to protect the soil. And it needs to go out farther than most people go, because if you think about it at all, the roots go a lot further out than like 3 feet or something. And a 3 foot radius is about the largest that people usually mulch around their tree. But what you need to do is imagine a circle around the fattest part of the canopy of the tree and extend that circle to the ground. And that's the area that you need to mulch your tree, because that's the root system. And the root system actually goes far beyond that, believe it or not. But that's the minimum amount that you need to protect for a tree to be really robust and to survive these massively fluctuating weather events that are now the norm, okay? These are not aberrations. This is the new normal, okay? We're going to have more droughts. We never had droughts before, but we're going to have them on a regular basis now. You just can't predict when. We're going to have more storms. We're going to have more everything, more fluctuation. Your tree is going to be a lot more robust, a lot more robust. It's going to be worth your effort to mulch all the way to the edge of the drip line. Daryl's having no problems. Daryl's stuff is doing fine. Peter's stuff is doing fine.
So they have plenty of mangoes available?
They have. Well, they're not selling them. But if you know one of them, apologize on my behalf and then hit them up for some fruit. So anyway, I just wanted to say that we are seeing people who didn't do that have fewer less fruit to share, and so we actually don't have as much to glean this year. So mulch all the way out to your drip line, and then hit us up next year to go pick some fruit for you.
Well, if you have another invaluable tip like that, Russell, we still have 3 minutes left. Yeah, I mean, that was great. That was great. I'm sure the people really, really appreciated that because it's so important. I wouldn't even have thought of it.
Right, right. And that's something that homeowners can do. There's so much that we can do as homeowners and as a community. And it doesn't naturally come up unless it just happens to come up like this does. And that's why the number one thing we're doing is not trying to tell people what to do, you know, with a finger wagging. I'm fingering wagging here, you know. Yeah. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to get people together because it's not just me. There's just a lot of genius. And when we get together in gleaning, so again, Roger, hope you're going to come to that.
Absolutely.
There's all sorts of genius that happens when we get people together. And especially, that's always been true. You know, 15 years ago, Facebook wasn't that big. Social media wasn't that big. You know, we've got all these things going on now where people are more isolated, and it's easy to blame it on the recent events. But it's always been a challenge to get people to come out of their houses and do stuff together. It's always been worth it to get people to come out of their houses and do stuff together. So the mission continues to get people to do that, but it does address some of the issues that we have now of being too cooped up in our houses. So you know, it's sort of like local food tasting better. Like, life is better when you get out of your house and do stuff with people.
Well, people complain about the heat, but the early morning hours are fine. The evening hours are great. I've taken a walk the last couple of evenings since 8 o'clock. I couldn't believe how cool it was. You know, it felt cool.
Yeah. I've been doing that, too. And that's a great point, Bob. When we glean during the hotter, you know, during the fall and during the spring, we get out early. So, we're not going to be driving people to do stuff in the heat. And we just have a lot of fun. So we gleaned at a watermelon producer. That was the last place we gleaned, actually second to last. We at the beginning of the morning, we put 3 watermelons on ice. And so for our break, we cut open a bunch of watermelons and, you know, had a little party. So you can have a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah, it's speaking of watermelons, I know there's a producer over on the East Coast of Florida that does the organic watermelons, and they sell to Sprouts. And, you know, so if you buy an organic watermelon in Sprouts, it's from the East Coast of Florida.
Well, that's good to hear. We have a caller wanted to ask a question. Are you there, caller? Oh, let me put this button on. Okay, caller, are you there?
Yeah, there, I'm here.
We have 20 seconds left.
Andrew, help us think outside the box on mulch. How do we get and produce and use mulch? Where can we get it reasonably?
There are a lot of companies that contract with cities and counties, and they produce a bunch of wood chips, and they're always looking for places to dump these wood chips rather than having